Our next guest, now officially a returning champ, apparently liked his first visit so much, he used all his powers to forge a rematch on Twitter. The handle's at Joshua_Newman. You can follow his work for the Salt Lake Tribune online, SLTrib.com. Josh Newman back again. Josh, hope you and yours had a nice holiday. How are things in Salt Lake City?
Doing well. I appreciate that. I hope you and yours also had a nice holiday. And long time no speak, right? We're back at it.
So when we talked 2 weeks ago, before the Utes just smashed the Ducks, and if I told you 2 weeks ago, we're going to talk again, and at that time, Brian Kelly will be the coach at LSU, Lincoln Riley at USC, would you have hung up and called a crisis hotline? I mean, could you imagine 2 weeks ago even having this conversation?
No, I mean, it's crazy. And look, the college football coaching carousel, it's not like this is a new phenomenon, but it does feel like the carousel, in this case, is in hyperdrive, right? With a big name like Lincoln Riley going from one big school to another big school, you know, Brian Kelly from Notre Dame to LSU. The thing with Brian Kelly is, not only is he going from a big school at Notre Dame to a big school at LSU, but he's leaving Notre Dame, you know, 6 days before they might make the college football playoff. It's crazy. Like, there's six teams still alive to win the whole thing. Notre Dame is one of them, and the head coach leaves. I mean, that's just unprecedented and honestly kind of hard to wrap your head around.
You know, since we're both East Coasters, you're a Long Island guy, I'm a Jersey guy, we're actually both Yankee fans, but and I don't know why they haven't been involved yet, because shortstop, catcher, center field rotation, that's a show in itself. But the Mets land Max Scherzer for, I don't know, $1 billion. I don't have to tell you the back pages of the Daily News, New York Post. On a scale of 1 to 10, just how nuts do you figure MLB fans are going around the city?
Oh, probably a 17 on a scale of 1 to 10. You know, you and I were texting, you know, this morning about the Yankees a bit, and I said, you know, I grew up a Yankee fan, but I've always been, you know, oddly fascinated with the angst of Mets fans, right? They hang on to 1986, 1969, and, you know, they went to the World Series in 2015, but it's always this, you know, this mood of, like, gloom and doom. And I just find it interesting that, you know, the Mets now have a deep-pocketed owner in Steve Cohen, and he's not afraid to throw the money around, as we've seen, you know, specifically now with Max Scherzer, who's one of the great pitchers of this generation, you know, about to make, you know, $45 million a year for 3 years.
Oh, nice work if you can get it. we're talking with Josh Newman, Salt Lake Trib. Let's harken back to the game November 20th. The Utes a chance to clinch the South, take down the number three team in the country. It was prime time on ABC. I mean, to be crass, it was just an ass-whipping. I know you're relatively new to Utah football, but Josh, from those you speak with and hear from, would it be fair to say that was one of the truly great days in program history?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, look, they've, you know, they were the original BCS busters in 2004 under Urban Meyer. You know, they beat up Pitt in the Fiesta Bowl that year. The program has won a Sugar Bowl, you know, to cap an undefeated season back in 2008. So there have been some, you know, obviously some very significant days for the program, but if you want to boil it down to just, you know, the Pac-12 era, which is 2011 to now, that game against Oregon and what was at stake and the opponent and prime time and a full state, you know, the whole thing, that has to be one of the, it might be the biggest win in the history, in the Pac-12 history of the program. You know, they went to the Pac-12 title game a couple of times. There's been some other big regular season games. But again, just what has gone on here, you know, for the past few months, you know, with the death of Aaron Lowe and everything, everything that goes along with that, and again, just the stakes and the opponent. Yeah, it does feel like one of the more significant days in program history.
You know, your piece in the Trib yesterday, I kind of did a double take because, you know, Kyle Whittingham to me is a next level coach. He's 62 years old. I had never heard a whisper about the potential of him walking away. So what could you tell us about any speculation that he was even thinking of retirement? And I guess what did he actually have to say during the media session?
You know, to be fair, it really, that's all it really is speculation. And look, you're going to get that at this time of year, you know, whether it be a guy maybe on the older side in Kyle Whittingham, you know, looking to retire potentially, or guys like Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly looking for other jobs. I didn't totally disagree with the notion that maybe Kyle Whittingham wants to retire. I mean, look, he just turned 62. He has already said publicly in the past that he does not intend to coach past 65. Okay, you take that. You add in, you know, the toll of what has gone on here between the pandemic, the death of two players within 9 months of each other. Maybe he's worn down. Maybe he's tired. He's a father of four. He's a grandfather of six. His own father, Fred, died young at 64. That is not lost on Kyle. There was what I considered a reasonable line of thinking that, you know, if you take all those factors, and if he can get this Utah team over the hump, get them to a Rose Bowl, get to the pinnacle of his profession, maybe this would be a good spot for Kyle to walk away. He wasn't super firm yesterday. He didn't say yes or no. He said that it's not on his mind and that he's having as good a time now as he's ever had in his career, which I understand. You know, this team has circled the wagons, you know, won the South. They've won 8 of 9. They're playing in the Pac-12 title game for the third straight non-COVID season. He said it's not on his mind. He didn't give a firm yes or no. So this is where we are. You know, there's nothing to report. There's nothing imminent. There's nothing, you know, behind the scenes happening. He's going to coach in the Pac-12 title game. He'll coach in the bowl game, whichever bowl game that may be. Maybe he has this conversation with his athletic director, other leadership inside the athletic department. I'm sure he's spoken to his wife about this, to some extent. So, you know, nothing imminent right now. So let's see where it goes.
Yeah, but that's an interesting take. I had never heard a lot of that. So one of the topics this week, you know, you look back at the blowout, Utah just took them apart. You mentioned home game, the emotion honoring Ty Jordan and Aaron Lowe, Oregon with two missed field goals, the first two all year, the Covey return at the end of the half. So in talking with the guys, is there any logic to, look, that was a Murphy's Law game for Oregon. Everything went right for the Utes, and you just logic says it's going to be a different deal Friday.
Yeah, no, I do agree with that. There's definitely some Murphy's Law to that, but it wasn't a fluke. Like, Utah executed, and Utah certainly outplayed them, and Oregon was genuinely bad in that game on both sides of the ball. Now, that said, I do expect this to be different. Like, I don't think that Utah is going to blow them out, you know, by 31 points. I think, you know, Oregon's best is a lot better than what they showed on November 20th. And I don't know, I've seen Utah's very best. Like, is Oregon's very best better than Utah's best? I don't know. I think those two are close, right? Best versus best. You start to break things down and you look at it, you analyze it, you overanalyze it. I don't know that Oregon is going to make up 31 points. Even if you take away the Covey punt return, is Oregon going to make up 24 points? Like, I keep coming back to just how one-sided that, you know, that first meeting was. It was completely one-sided. So I don't know, you know, I do expect it to be close, much closer than what it was in the first meeting. But I don't know that, you know, that Oregon is going to be able to make up 31 points in 13 days.
Well, I'm going to incorporate all that before I call my bookie Friday. few final thoughts for Josh Newman of the Salt Lake Trib. A lot to unpack in that game, but the stats on Kayvon Thibodeau, he made 7 tackles, but I think you kind of have to look at that with a grain of salt. I'm kind of curious about the buzz the job former Oregon coordinator Andy Ludwig did to really neutralize him and kind of have him, you know, he was unable to wreak havoc. I thought that that was a brilliant game plan.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And I remember sitting in the press box talking to some other beat writers as the first half was unfolding, and we're just talking. It's like Andy Ludwig is pushing all the right buttons right now, all the right buttons, whether it's, you know, whether it's Tavion Thomas or T.J. Pledger, you know, rushing the ball, or, you know, you're looking for one of your three tight ends. In the past game, I thought Ludwig called a very good game as part of what has really been a really strong season for Andy Ludwig. I mean,
yeah.
Andy Ludwig has definitely caught some flack from Utah fans in previous years, but I think he's had a really, really nice season. I think he has a really good rapport with Cam Rising going back two or three years since Rising got here. I think that's been a major help. You know, those two guys have been on the same page. So, yeah, I just thought that Andy Ludwig pushed all the right buttons, and he hasn't really, not just that Oregon game, but I think for a lot of the last month, you know, the offensive line has played exceptionally well. You know, Tavion Thomas and T.J. Pledger and Mekhi Bernard, they know what to do in the backfield, and I just think that he hasn't asked Rising to do a ton. Now, Rising is capable of putting the offense on his shoulders. He's thrown for 300 yards a couple of times, but I think when Utah is at its peak, when it's, you know, when the offense is at its best, I think it's where they are rushing the ball and they are not asking Rising to do a ton.
Yeah, they ran for 265 and no sacks. The line was brilliant. The last thing I want to get to is the defensive line, which we didn't hit on last time, but aside from Mika Tafua on one end, he's a three-year starter. The other guys are like all freshmen, particularly Junior Tafuna inside, who had a great game. Well, what about how that unit is coming around and how they're playing right now as the season winds down?
Yeah, that unit's been a really pleasant surprise. You know, you mentioned Tafua, and look, you know, going back to the preseason, I think a lot of us thought, you know, look, Mika Tafua is a veteran guy, and he's going to play well, but I don't know that anybody could have predicted that Tafua would lead the Pac-12 in sacks. He's had a very surprising season. You know, you mentioned Junior Tafuna. The only reason that Tafuna is starting is because Vianney Mawala, who was a fifth-year senior, kind of the anchor of that defensive line, was lost for the season in mid-September, game three, with a knee injury. You know, in comes Tafuna, second-year freshman. He's a little green, and they didn't miss a beat. And he's gotten progressively, you know, better and better and more comfortable each week. He's been terrific. And then Van Fillinger, who is the other defensive end opposite Tafua, you know, he's another type of guy. He's like, he has the size and the speed to be that kind of ferocious edge rusher that we didn't think Tafua would be. You know, Fillinger has, you know, four or five sacks, and he can wreak havoc. He's had a nice season too. So, you know, it's important to remember that not just on the D-line, but so many spots along the defense, right? The secondary, there's young linebackers. There's a lot of youth that's playing a ton right now. So not only is this Utah defense pretty good right now, but you've got a lot of young guys playing, you know, in key games and key spots now. So we think that they're going to be really good, you know, a year, 2 years, 3 years down the road.
That is a lot of top flight info. Folks, he's Josh Newman. He'll be Vegas bound. On Twitter, use the handle at @Joshua_Newman. Online again, sltrib.com. Josh, again, much appreciate the time. Travel safe to Sin City. And I'll be looking for you that first week in February when Oregon and Utah square off on the hardwood. But really, really appreciate your time. Thanks a lot, Josh.
Done deal, Steve. Appreciate it.
All right, take it easy.